Wow. I hate Axl Rose. I think it was the worst choice for AC/DC. Although, who else could do it, really?
I was just I was going to say, who would you pick? I mean, it was tough. He manned up. He had
Steve
a busted.
Steve Whiteman.
Thanks for checking out Party Like a Rockstar podcast. I'm your host, Joel Miller. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese spreads on the market today. They're delicious and healthy, made from a cashew and almond milk, and blended with various locally sourced fresh herbs, vegetables, and spices. There's no vegetable oils, soy, fillers, starches, or nutritional yeast. It's lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher perev, and 100% vegan. Enjoy the show. All right, here we go. My first guest is Eddie Daly. He's better known as Eddie Spaghetti, the lead singer and bassist of the Super Suckers. My second guest is Brian Damage Forsyth. You know him as the guitarist from the band Kix. My intro question to you guys is, Eddie, are you Italian?
No.
Well, there's a restaurant I found. It's called Spaghetti Eddie's. And it's in Glendora. So we should go there on January 4th. But do you know what January 4th is?
The fourth day of the new year? I don't know.
Your birthday? He's a smart guy, Brian. No, my birthday is in May, but you should have known that. January 4th is National Spaghetti Day.
Oh.
Other spaghetti trivia I got for you is Italians never use a spoon and a fork when eating spaghetti. This is an American habit. In Italy, you simply twirl a fork against the dish.
Yeah, I don't ever use a spoon either. In fact, I don't even like spaghetti that much. And in fact, if I had it to do over again, I would be Eddie Machete and not Eddie Spaghetti. That's a big regret of my life. Calling myself Eddie Spaghetti has belittled all my good hard work that I put into being a legitimate rock and roller. First of all, I'm Eddie Spaghetti, and then my band is called the Super Suckers. So it's like two strikes against me before I even set foot in your ear hole.
I do have some Super Suckers questions we can jump right to. If you want, here, we'll go into it right away. So my question would be, where is it here? We'll go down the list. Super Suckers who don't close their eyes. See? Got that there, that one? Would you say the best Super Sucker would be Pamela DeBar, Cynthia Plastercaster, Rob Halford, or Little Rock Connie? You can plead the fifth.
I guess I'd have to go with Rob Halford. I bet he knows his way around a phallus.
Okay. Last little bit of fun. So Kix. So Kix. Kix cereal. So do you know your Kix cereal trivia, Brian?
Maybe.
Nice. You want to hear some Kix cereal?
Sure.
All right. So you have Berry Berry Kix, Honey Kix, or the original Kix, or its colorful spinoff, Trix, which I never knew was a spinoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, check that out. The corn bubbles were coated with vitamins B and D, calcium and phosphorus, and marketed as food that helps in balancing your diet. A TV commercial aired in the 1950s declaring that Kix was a food for action and had 83% energy. And this one's cool. So in 1947, the record-breaking offer was a glow-in-the-dark Lone Ranger atomic bomb ring. And for 15 cents and a box top, you would get the ring. General Mills got 1.6 million box tops back. And $240,000 in loose change. It's one of the best marketing cereal campaigns ever, I guess. And
Kix
I looked
has been
it up
around since the 1940s?
Earlier, 1930 something. So,
wow.
Yeah, I didn't know. And you can buy the ring on eBay if you want it, Brian, for $100. I did my research for you.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Should we go into more important stuff?
So, sure.
Yeah. Well, I figured you learn a little before we begin.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know if there's anything more important than that, but let's try.
Well, now you can tell your kids. I don't know. Brian, do you have any kids?
Nope.
Okay.
Not that I know.
Understood. Right. Eddie, you have a couple kids? Three kids. Three. You're making up for us, so we're good here.
Yeah, yeah.
Now when you're going through the food aisle or the cereal aisle. Actually, I snooped. I saw on your Facebook you're not a big cereal person, Brian.
No, I wouldn't consider Kix food.
Yeah.
I think that 83% energy is actually sugar.
Yes.
83% sugar.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Anyway, Brian, what does schmooze mean?
What is what?
I read that your shoes, your band initially was called Shoes. What is Shoes? I did find a place in Pennsylvania, I think, and it was a, I think it was a shoe shop, and they were like playing with the word.
Yeah, we just, you know, early on, you have to come up with a name, and we were just sitting around, and this was long before, like, even Steve was in the band. It was just the original four of us, and we were just sitting there, and the drummer at the time, he just looked down at his feet, and he goes, why don't we just call it the Shoes? And then it was like, huh? And, you know, we thought about it. And then I thought, I came up with the spelling, the S-H-O-O-Z-E. And then everybody goes, yeah, that's cool. So that's how we did it.
So guitar players are so creative. And so you're one here, Brian. So the Super Suckers were the Black Super Suckers. Black Super Suckers was a pornographic book.
It was a video, probably. You could order, like, we used to do this thing when we started the band. We would just get into the living room and jam, and our singer would, we would just kind of play music, and the singer we had at the time would go through this adult literature and just read all the titles of the videos you could order from the back as like a scat or whatever. And this is something that we did a few times, and we had a show and we needed a name, and we boiled it down to the Cock Hungry Studs or the Black Super Suckers. And we decided to go with the Black Super Suckers.
Knowing full well that, for it.
That we were going to change that name after this one show. We were just going to do the one show as the Black Super Suckers. And then, but of course this show went really well, and the name stuck. No, so now we're stuck with this stupid name forever.
What was the other name going to be?
Oh, I don't know. We were thinking maybe Monkey Wrench, or, you know, something more benign and more typical rock and roll-y. I can't remember, something with acid was in the title at one time. And, you know, just something more cool. Black Acid even would have been cooler than the Super Suckers. You know, just anything that maybe have been taken more seriously. You know, it's like you're gonna watch Caddyshack over and over and over again, right? You're gonna watch The Godfather maybe once or twice, and then you're gonna remember it, it's being done. But the comedy movies are always the things that you return to, but sure, they're never gonna win the Academy Award. So,
you know, it's funny. So yeah. I co-wrote a song for Darius Rucker, and I did it with Dean from Toad the Wet Sprocket. And I asked him, because I was like Appetite for Destruction when I was a kid, man. I listened to it again and again and again and again. And he said the reason why Hootie and the Blowfish got so huge is you can play that album, the Rearview Mirror thing or whatever. You can play it how many times in a row without even realizing at your family barbecue that you've heard this damn record four times. He goes, you can't do that with Led Zeppelin. As much as you might like Led Zeppelin, you know when it started and you know when it finished. And so that was his rationale for that album actually being in the top 10 of all time.
So, wow.
Yeah, nuts, huh?
That's nuts.
Yeah.
And he's got a stupid name in his band, yet they did quite well. So I don't know.
Yeah, and he hates being called Hootie.
I'm sure he does.
So you figure, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were like, they were doing bars and stuff for, I don't know, like 16 years or something. They would have had plenty of time to be like, okay, we're going to be, I don't know what they would have called. Maybe they would have called themselves the Monkey Wrench Gang.
Yeah.
Maybe. Could have been. All right. You guys know each other from Rhino Bucket, or was it before you had met? Or?
Well, I knew Brian before Rhino Bucket because of his work in Kix.
Sure.
When this record came out, it came out when 1983. So that dates both of us. But I was such a huge fan, and I don't know if you can see Brian here, the way his pants fit. We would stare at this photo for hours and just go like, I want my jeans to fit just like that. And we would try to get
don't eat raisin bran and Kix and all that other stuff. And maybe,
well, I never really put it together with the cereal. It was just, they were such a great band. It didn't register as being a cereal until much later.
How did you guys get the band name Kix?
Oh, that's a good one. after the Shoes, when we got signed, there was another band in the Midwest called Shoes. So we had to change it.
And with the same spelling?
No, it was a different spelling, but they had songs on the radio. So, you know.
Gotcha.
So anyway, we had to change it. So going into the recording, we had changed it to the Generators. And we recorded the album under the name Generators. And got all the way through the final mixes, and they were ready to do the album artwork. And they decided to run that name and found out that they couldn't use that name either. So they come back down, like we're all down in at the offices there up at Atlantic, and the art guy comes down going, oh, we just ran the name. You can't use the name. We need another name. We need it by 5 o'clock or it's going to delay the whole, you know, the release date and all that stuff. And we're standing there going, oh, here we go again, having to think of a name. Like, that's the worst thing, trying to think of a good name. And Donnie just whips out off the top of his head. He goes, let's call it Kix and spell it K-I-X. And we were all just standing there going, I guess so. It's like, it wasn't that great of a name either, but nobody else had any better ideas, so we just went with it. But it turned out that he had played in a band called Kix, but it was spelled K-I-C-K-S at one point, and he also played in a band called Jax, spelled J-A-X. So he just combined those two things. Like, his mind works like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I worked for Stone Temple Pilots. So they were, there's more.
This is the first record.
Yeah.
It's a great album cover.
This is a great album, too. An amazing, amazing record.
Since you're showing stuff off.
Yeah, what do you got?
I got this painting my brother did. You can see it.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's like a 4x4. Can you see
it? So what is it? Is it like it's a photograph that's been screened onto canvas?
No, it's actual hand painted. My brother does billboards, so he can duplicate photographs.
He's good.
Yeah, he's really good.
Wow, are you going to list your house for sale? Because this is a perfect time to do the walkthrough. So Stone Temple Pilots. So they were Mighty Joe Young, weren't allowed to use it because of the movie. Then they were STP, which was A-OK until Scott got arrested, I think, the first time. And then the Motor Oil Company, who I heard had sent them swag, was like, nope. So after he got arrested, then they stopped that. And then they did Stone Temple Pilots as this made up moniker. So they didn't have to go through all this again, but it meant nothing. They I think they were like you a bit. And it was like the last minute of like, we don't know. We don't know. So they just put some words together and created the band name.
It turns out the more inane your band name is, like that, Stone Temple Pilots, Pearl Jam, all these just boring, lame, stupid band names, they're the best kind to have. U2, Coldplay, all these lame, the lamer your band name is, the less it matters.
Bob Dylan.
So, the Rolling Stones have a really cool band name, but other than that, you know, the band names don't mean much.
Yeah. Well, you got to come up with something.
Yeah. And, it seems like that's a common story, though. Like most bands, like you guys, trying to come up with something for your first gig. That's the story of how Rhino Bucket came to be. They needed a name.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I was listening to it
too.
Yeah, I don't know what it. Yeah.
Rhino Bucket is a terrible band name because it doesn't. They don't sound anything like a Rhino Bucket. I mean, it's such a rock juggernaut, that band, you know.
That was the same thing. They were going to use that name for the gig because they had a gig that week, and then they were going to think of a better name, and they just never did.
Right. Lazy. Now I have all sorts of great band names that I would use, you know, the Unsolvable Problems.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can call them, you can have them as album titles.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing about Super Suckers is you guys were just so cool that you made the name cool.
Right. Exactly. It's like the Ramones, you know, and there's nothing cool about the Ramones as a band name, but it's, they were so cool that they made it cool. Yeah.
And it is cool. So you knew Brian's music, but you hadn't met him. But when you produced that Rhino Bucket record, that was with Brian?
Yeah, that was with Brian. And that was a big thrill for me to get to record Brian. And you know, every day we did guitar solo, the 2 days we were doing guitar solos were some of the most fun I've ever had in the studio with Brian. I mean, it was just every solo. He did this lick on one of the songs, and I thought for sure it was an accident. Like, he wanted to do the whole solo over again. I was like, no, we can't do that again because there's this one little part in there that you'll never be able to duplicate. And he's like, oh, this, go bang, bang. And he does it like, oh, you did that on purpose? I was like, my mind was just blown away. Such a great guitar player, Brian Forsyth is.
And you were, so I heard some interview or something, and you guys were re-releasing an album for Kicks, and you went in and there was like tracks that you didn't remember you had ever done in the beginning. So what's that like when you go back to these recordings that I assume at the time the albums came out, you thought they were, I don't know, should I say perfect? Did you think they were really great? Was there any ones that you were like, ooh, I hope this works out? Or were you thinking we're good?
Oh no, you can always, you know, there's always room for improvement, but yeah, a lot of times, like,
so the improvement was already done and you found it like 20 years later.
Well, those were tracks. Cause I would go back like when we were done and when I was doing guitar fills and I just play all over everything. And then they would just pick and choose, you know, the producer.
Sure.
And put them in certain spots. And, you know, a few times there would be like a cool lick that I came up with that I'd throw in there. And then when I'd hear the final mix, it wouldn't be there. And I'd go, oh man, that was like my favorite lick. And then I'd remember it for a little while after, then I just forget about it. And then, you know, then years later, when it pops back up, it's like, oh, right, I remember that lick now. So it's kind of cool when that happens.
As a producer, Eddie, and I know you really enjoy producing records, how do you decide some of this stuff? I mean, is there stuff that you've buried where you've been like, I hope this is right?
Well, for me, it's like everything you're doing is just to serve the song.
Sure.
I'm just always trying to make the songs as good as they can. And sometimes when you're working with somebody who's not really used to being in the studio, they're not used to working in a collaborative sort of way on a song, you'll step on their ego a little bit when you take out their parts or you change something that they, you know, they, for some
That's
reason,
when rock stars get good. You have to step right. on. Yeah. You got
to get emotionally attached for some reason to this art that you're making. And that's just the wrong approach for it. You should be as robotic about it as possible because it's not about you. It's about the song, you know? So for me, it's the choices usually seem pretty obvious.
Yes.
You know, this is going to work for the song or this isn't. And sometimes somebody's feelings gets hurt in the studio, especially the way I am. I'm kind of I have a brusque demeanor about myself sometimes, or, you know, I come across as being a little bit of an asshole when I don't mean to be an asshole. It's just, I kind of come across, you know, cause I'm being so direct and like all me in their head.
Line equals like, it no, out here. He's like the nicest guy in the world. So. Guys are making
yeah, exactly.
It'd be good. I don't know. I think
Brian was super pro. I mean, working with Brian was easy because he's a professional. He's been down the, you know, he recorded a million records before he got to me. So,
do you do a lot of studio work, Brian?
No, not a whole lot. I mean, you know, I play tracks on people's albums, like Eddie's current album, but
yes.
People ask me all the time, but as Eddie knows, it takes me a long time. You're sending me almost daily texts. How's it coming?
Right.
Oh, because you're recording them at home and sending them?
Yeah. And I'm just like so slow and I'm so technically challenged that I just put it off because I don't want to deal with it half the time. But
I knew that's what you're doing. I knew that you're just waiting for something to come to you and just taking your time. But
you so know, are you like
it,
a?
We'll get down to it. We need it.
You're a noodler.
Noodler.
Yeah, where you're just like messing around, and then you'll be like, "Ooh, that actually sounds good."
Yeah, I mean, my favorite solos were just accidents. They weren't planned. I just try to go with the flow, you know. And if I sometimes, well, especially during the pandemic when we weren't playing at all, I hardly even picked up my guitar unless I had to. So when I did, it took a long time for things to come out because I was so rusty, you know.
Huh.
Well, the solos that you put on our new record, I put out there, me and a buddy of mine, Frank Meyer, recorded this new record that'll be out in the next couple of months. It's called Motherfucking Rock and Roll. And it's real good. And the
What's it? What is
solos
it
are
about?
fine.
Is it a
It's
doo-wop
rock and
record?
roll songs about rock and roll for people who like rock and roll music. You know, for us old farts who like rock and roll records. I wrote a couple songs. Frank wrote a couple songs. We did a couple of covers, and we actually cover a song from this record on it,
Yep.
and that Brian plays on. And so we got the original guitar player from the original band to make it sound real legit, and it sounds real cool. I don't know if
Very
you've
cool.
heard the record yet, have you, Brian?
I've heard the files. Frank sent me the files, so.
Okay, right on. Yeah, it sounds real good. And
Yeah.
then I was specifically had to have Brian on the songs that I brought to the table, so that's why I was harassing him.
Okay. Yeah, that's funny because Frank sent me he wanted me to do the My Sharona solo, and I struggled. That thing hung me up for a long time because I just could not
Yeah.
get through that. I couldn't get through that solo. That guy just. His licks, they weren't like familiar to me, so I was just stumbling and stumbling. I could not get a good take on that song. Finally, luckily, Frank relieved me of the duties. I was like
Yeah,
so relieved.
we actually got Burton from the Knack to do
Yeah.
that solo,
Oh,
which
come on. Yeah, well,
was
he's
a
got it
coup.
down.
Yeah,
He
he
brought
did
it.
it
What you,
immediately.
Brian brought in a shill.
But it's cool though because he doesn't do it exactly like the record, but it's still just as good.
Right,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah, it's a different take of it, but it's real cool.
Yeah.
What's your favorite song to cover?
You asking?
No, either one of you guys.
To cover?
Yeah, like favorite song for Play Free Bird. You know, what's the favorite one that you're like, oh, come on, I'm gonna play this instead? Like Whiskey in the Jar. That's cool. I always love Whiskey in the Jar. You ever sing
I like
Whiskey in the
doing
Jar,
the
Eddie? I bet that you kill
the
it.
Cowboy song by Thin Lizzy. That's a favorite of mine, the
That's a
Cowboy
good one.
song.
Yeah.
And I also like doing there's this AC/DC cover that I do called Carry Me Home. It's sort of a B-side from the Bon Scott era.
Early, right. So that
Yeah,
one,
I like that one.
yeah, so one of the guys was saying, so I guess they did Carry Me Home when Axl Rose was singing with them.
Really?
I think so. Yeah, they started bringing back some of their old catalog,
I
which
don't
is
remember.
fun, you know, a different spin on it. You
Yeah,
guys
I
ever heard
hate
of
Axl
Axl?
Rose, but
Never heard of
I
Axl
hate
Rose?
him.
No.
I hate Axl Rose. I think that was the worst choice for AC/DC. Although, who else could do it, really?
So I
But
was gonna say, who would you pick? I mean, it was
I
tough,
would
and he
pick
manned up. He had a
Steve
busted.
Whiteman.
Yeah.
This fellow right here could have done it. He
You know
would have
what'd be
done a much
fun? I
better
mean,
job.
I guess it would be a little difficult logistically, but you are talking about the biggest band in the world or one of the top five, 10, whatever. Like a different dude every song, you know, on tour.
Right. Any three in this Zoom session would have done would have been a cooler choice than Axl Rose.
Wow, you hate Axl.
I do. I think that he is the reason I don't like Guns N' Roses. I mean, I never. But by the time, to be fair, by the time Guns N' Roses came out, I was kind of over heavy metal. I was getting into like punk rock and even country music a little bit by then. But so they were kind of too late for me to really get into them. But
Yeah.
everybody I know, everybody, all the guys in my band love Guns N' Roses, and I am the outlier, just
Yeah,
like I'm used to being. So.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was terrible. I was a huge fan. I liked it, but I like Slash more.
Yeah, I mean Slash is cool. So, I mean I can listen to some Slash guitar solos.
Well, it helps too that he's like genuinely a good guy, and you'll never ever hear anybody. Well, maybe his ex-wife, other than her. Well, no, I think she did really well in the divorce. So I think everybody loves Slash,
Right.
killing it across the board. I don't know. So, you know, I heard in this interview when you were saying how country, how you kind of just learned that country was punk. Well, that's a bad way to put it. Hank Williams taught you that country and punk have a lot in common. And I had listened to this guy named Blind Willie McTell. I don't know. Did you guys ever get into the blues, you know, deep in the deep cuts? So Blind Willie McTell did this song called God Don't Like It. And I went over to Peter from Bad Religion's house when I was a kid. And I was like, dude, this is fucking punk. You know, this is real punk. This is punk. Because how it would work is those guys back in the day, like they were blind singers because they couldn't work during the week. So they would perform. They weren't able to pick cotton, I guess, as efficiently or maybe at all. I'm not really sure, but they would perform. Well, what's interesting is the people with the tiny amount of money they earned, they'd spend it at the bar drinking. And you got a guy up there singing, you shouldn't drink because God don't like it. That's fucking punk, man.
Indeed.
It's a great song. It's 1924 or something. You got to check it out. It's freaking great, you know.
Yeah, but I like those old recordings.
I do too. My friends would make fun of me when I was a kid because they'd be like, it's just like some scrabbly shit with some guy whining in the back. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I know, and I love it. I love
That's
it.
That's what makes it so good.
Makes it so good. It's the roots, you know. I got in Townes Van Zandt, Jerry Jeff Walker, who just passed, unfortunately. But John Prine, too, passed. You know, these guys, singer-songwriter at a different level of, I just appreciate it. I love it. And you had said, Eddie, I listened to your guys' interviews, so it's bad I throw this shit at you, but performing as a solo artist, recording as a solo artist, you were looking at expanding your portfolio with different things. So as a solo artist, you said you would do stuff that you would want to bring in the audience more than maybe a ballad type song. I wasn't really totally sure what you were trying to say.
Well, the whole idea of the solo show in general is like I can be like a human jukebox, essentially. You know, I can let the crowd tell me what they want to hear and try to play it. If I kind of know the song, I'm going to give it a shot. So
I can go yell kicks.
You can, and I can give it a shot.
All right.
But you know, generally speaking, I like it when they yell out songs that I've written myself. But you know. I'll try covers too. I'm not going to do Freebird or anything, but you know, I will try ridiculous covers if I have any sort of notion of how to play it at all, which I might not, you know. So, yeah. But I do like the, you know, that's the thing about country music that I like is it's really about the words. You know, the words have to be good because the music is so simple.
Yeah.
And when it's good, it's three chords and the truth. You know, I mean, that's the best way to put it, you know. It's just really well.
That should be a song title. Or shit, that should be an album title. Three words and the truth. Oh,
three chords and the truth. It's got to be.
I heard you say it in another interview, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody's.
That's the only part of the other interviews I liked.
Yeah, that interviewer sucked.
Brian had a really good one. He's in the airport, man. He's like trying to pick up his luggage, and this guy comes up and he's like, you're on a Def Leppard cruise, and the guy can't sing, and then he's looking, and Brian's like, I couldn't sing. He said, what happened? I don't know, I'm not his bunk mate, you know. But he's asking these questions, and then at the end Brian's like, by the way, I'm with Kicks, and then the guy's kind of like, oh, okay. And then Terry Alou comes on, who, by the way, I recorded yesterday. and then he starts talking about Terry about, I have no idea why, I don't know, I turned up, but it was pretty entertaining. I was like, poor guy, he's trying to get his crap out of the airport. And he's kind of, how'd the cruise go? Well, it was rough. Are you doing a lot of those rock and roll cruises? Or, I mean, that sounds like a good gig.
Yeah, we were doing them at least once a year until this past year, but, they're starting back up in 2022, but yeah, they're the first one we did, I was kind of leery going into it. I was like, oh man, do I want to be trapped on this boat with all these drunk people? Like,
I've never been on a cruise.
Yeah, it's scary going into it, but once we did one or two of them, you get used to it for one thing. But I I'm really good at like sneaking around. I can get from one end of the ship to the other without ever being seen.
Do you not drink anymore?
Oh, I haven't had a drink in almost 24 years.
Okay, so what the hell do you do on the cruise?
Eat.
Oh, but then you get
and even that's hard these days because that food is, I don't know. But yeah, I spend a lot of time at the buffet.
So you go to the buffet, you go back to your room and you watch movies and stuff.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, well, half the cruises I was on with Kix and Rhino Bucket. So I was pretty busy.
Oh, you're super busy. All right. Yeah. I'm with you. I don't know. Have you done a cruise ever, Eddie?
Yeah, we've done that Outlaw Country cruise a few times and we're going to do it again in 2022 at the end of February. And it's super fun. I was wary as well, like just being trapped on the boat with all these fans, you know, like they're just going to be mobbing you the whole time and asking all the dumb questions that fans ask. But, you know, they're a pretty respectful bunch and it's kind of nice. And just I like having the gig be walking distance from my bed, you know, right. that part of it is really nice. So it's, you know, it's actually real fun.
So will you go to the crew bar or will you go to the people bar? I don't know, patron bar or whatever.
Well, I would just go to the people bar or whatever. This is going to be the first cruise where I'm not going to be drinking. I actually quit drinking fairly recently. Like it's just been a little over a year. So,
wow.
I'm kind of newly sober. So this will be my first cruise where I'm not going to be drinking. And I'm curious as to what I'm going to be doing, you know, because that was a big part of what you do. You just go out and get drunk and hang out. Now I'll just be hanging out without getting drunk.
Well, yeah, but they have like scuba and, you know, I don't know, go look at shit for the day. And
there's activities. Yeah, there's shit you can do.
To me, it sounds like old people stuff. You know, it's just kind of like we got shuffleboard and bingo starting at 7 p.m.
Hey, shuffleboard's fun.
I love shuffleboard. I actually
shuffleboard.
What's it called? Is it shuffleboard where you push it? Like in a bar, you push the metal cube on the table. Is that shuffleboard? Yeah. Shuffleboard's on the floor, right? With the fork?
Yeah, they do. That's both. It's the same thing.
Same game. The one in the bar where you push the metal thing is one of the best games ever invented. I want that.
Super fun. Yeah.
Super fun. I was going to get one in my old house, but my roommate wouldn't let me remove the TV from the house so that it would fit. But now we have TVs on the wall, so I could have got it.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, Brian, you're going to say something I'm sure was more important.
No, I was just going to mention that, you know, these like the rock cruises, like all the other activities are always like, you know, rock stuff. So it works out for the crowd. But that one Def Leppard cruise that you mentioned that I got stuck with TMZ at the airport.
You got to watch it. It was pretty funny because poor Brian's like, I really don't know what's going on right now. But you can see you're like a little like jet lagged. I don't know. You're just kind of like, I don't know.
Well, you know what it was I didn't know who they were. And they were asking me all these questions. And I was trying to be I didn't want to say anything bad about it. You know, so I was trying to be diplomatic and all. And then finally at the end, I go, well, who are you with anyway? And then they said TMZ. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad I didn't say anything stupid. But they made it stupid anyway when they
aired. They can edit you stupid however they want.
That was terrible. But I was going to say,
I think you came across stupid at all. And at least what I saw, I didn't.
No. But the way they presented on that show, they have that guy, whoever that announcer is, doing those goofy songs and stuff. And but anyway, I was going to say that.
I saw something else. There was no song. Anyway.
Oh, he was singing about, I don't know. They were making fun of Jimmy Bain's death, and the guy had some song he made up. But anyway,
that's bad form. But okay.
But that cruise didn't sell out, so it would only half sold. So half the ship was regular cruise people, like families and old people, and that was weird because then they had to have the old people's activities in place for them.
You were at bingo, weren't you? You were like, yes, this is going to be great.
No, but it was like the weirdest things. Cause like I'd be getting ready for one of our gigs and I'd come out of my cabin, like all dressed up with the, you know, the dark eyes and in my hair. And I'd be walking down the hall and a family would come out of their cabin, you know, the father and the wife and the kids and they grab the kids and hold them.
Son, you could end up like this guy.
Yeah, so that was a strange cruise, that one.
That's weird that it didn't sell out. I mean,
yeah, you would think
like Def Leppard.
Yeah, it was not a good cruise. It didn't turn out well.
These country cruise things that we do, they sell out immediately. Like this one that we're going to do in 2022 is already sold out, you know.
I'd love to go. Man, an outlaw country cruise would be the coolest one. I bet every band on there is cool.
Yeah, and it's just, that's the best part of it, is getting to hang out with, you know, Steve Earle and meet Chris Christopherson. And, you know, like, you just, every time there's some sort of legend on board. Ray Wiley Hubbard's going to be on there. Yeah.
Oh, come on. I mean, I know I know Willie Nelson. I saw that. I mean, and I'm not putting like tit for tat, but Kris Kristofferson was in Blade, man.
Yeah. He was cool as shit.
And he was the cool guy in Blade. You know, of course, he was the cool guy in Blade. What'd you talk about with Kris Kristofferson?
Oh, I forget, kids or something like that. His daughter was kind of chasing after Marty, our guitar player at the time, and he was just goofing on her, and you know, just talking about, you know, my kids aren't as old as his kids yet, but they're gonna be, and you know, just that sort of, just talk about life stuff, whatever's that going on at the moment, you know. And then I didn't ask him, so how, well, what was it like when you wrote Me and Bobby McGee? Or, you know, I didn't hit him up with any fanboy questions or anything like that. So
how many other people were dating Janice?
Right, exactly.
But a lot of these old country guys, they're just, they have color, you know. They're neat. Their stories are they're awesome to hear. They're random, they're cool, they're from a different era. There's just something special about them, you know.
Yeah, they're real cool. And that country cruise is fun because of that, you know. It's the hanging out with the other artists is the coolest part of it, for sure.
Yeah, I would like that. Did you ever go hang out at Willie's Ranch? He's apparently got a bar and everything set up on the property.
Yeah, Luck. It's called Luck, Texas. It's his little country town. It's actually, he made it to be like a Western town to film some movies that he was making in the, I don't know, 70s or 80s, whatever. And now it's just like a place where he hangs out. And yeah, we've been there. I got to play Trigger there, his guitar. And
oh, wow.
It was a, it was real, real, real fun.
He'll let people play his guitar?
The dude is the coolest, man. He does not give a shit. He is just so chill about everything. He, you know, he's just one of the guys. When he shows up, everybody's like, it's Willie Nelson, it's Willie Nelson. He's like, you know, hands you a Lone Star and passes the joint to you. And he's like, he's just the nicest, coolest, most relaxed guy.
He's smart as a whip too, man. If you hear him, like, I don't know, back in the 90s when Howard Stern, they're amazing interviews, because Howard Stern is so good at just dissecting you and then getting in there, and Willie Nelson throw that shit right back in your face. Like, you couldn't get, it was interesting, but you couldn't get him in a position he didn't want to be in.
Right.
And Howard Stern's really gifted at that.
Yeah, we were doing a photo shoot with Willie one time, and this photographer was being all anal about his aperture and his lighting, and he was being all, you know, holding that lighting meter up to your face and making sure everything's all right. And Willie's just like standing there for a second. The guy fires off like two or three pictures, and Willie's like, that's it, you got it, we're good. And the guy just had to go with whatever he got. You know, the guy was thinking he's gonna have like a half hour at least with Willie Nelson. He got like 2 minutes. Where he's just like, that's it, all right, I'm gonna learn something from that for sure.
Yeah, I imagine so. So you recorded recently, it was during quarantine, Eddie, you said you did an album called Music, The Stories Behind the Songs. So is it just you doing like spoken word stuff? You're talking about what you were doing, or?
Well, that's, I didn't really record anything. I just, that's what I've been doing from home to get people to hit the virtual tip jar or whatever, to, you know, try to keep the lights on around here while I couldn't work. You know, I just did like these posts on Instagram where I would do a song from my catalog, talk a little bit about a story about it, and then play it on the acoustic guitar. And I've kind of run out. Like, I think I did just about every single song I had that could be done on the acoustic guitar. And then, you know, I did like 180 or 90 of these things. And then I just started to run out of songs. So now I'm just doing like these rent parties at the end of each month where I take requests and interact with the people online and, you know, just try to engage the audience as much as I can through the, you know, through the phone basically, or whatever it is you're watching the internet on.
I don't know. I would assume that would be kind of fun. I mean, can people write in and ask you stuff while you're performing and then you read it?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the big part of it is like, so I'll have my,
my, like some of the people are entertaining and you get some stuff where you're like, that's actually awesome. I mean, you know,
for sure. Yeah. And some of the questions are dynamite, you know, and some
play
of the
Freebird pretending you're Elvis Presley, you know?
Right. And you know, it's super fun and I have a good time doing them. And I plan on doing them. Like I thought, well, we'll do it for like half hour, 45 minutes. And they usually go for like an hour and a half. I mean, these things go on and on.
Wow, that is a long time. Okay, yeah, that's a minute. All right, so I have a question for both of you. So when I was going to put together this podcast, I was at my friend's house. My friend has a daughter in fifth grade. She's in fifth grade. So her and her little girlfriends were there, and they were excited about the idea of a podcast. And they said, you need to ask all your guests when they first felt famous. So I thought about the question, and to broaden it, because you're talking about a little girl, when was a time in your life? Sorry. When was there a time in your career, your life, whatever, where you maybe felt famous, but you felt like you were on the right track? There was something going on that was exciting. There was a moment that that let you shine the light to your way, or something that happened to you that's worth mentioning. That is an important moment in your career.
Hmm, that is a good question.
Fifth graders are tough, dude. Yeah. Fifth grader girls are tough. Fifth grade girls.
I did have a moment where I felt like the universe was sort of behind me, and I was in the whatever that the tail. I had that tailwind or whatever the you know when you're on an airplane, and I had that feeling. I never really ever arrived at feeling famous,
mm-hmm.
but I remember we were, it was right at the end of recording Blow My Fuse. And I remember just one day just having that feeling like the universe was there and we were in line. Everything was lining up at that point, which it was for that record. But I distinctly remember that. But that's the only time I ever felt it. I mean, other than that, everything is usually out of sync.
Yeah. I mean, when that record came out, so your audiences went from what you started doing. Were you guys doing sheds at one point or?
Oh, we always were. Like we'd do a few one-offs at arenas and then not until Blow My Fuse. That was the first record we did where we finally got on an actual tour. Where we
yeah. Did you guys just do North America? Did you go out of the country or?
I went to Japan a few times and we went to England once. But the record company wouldn't pay for tour support over in Europe, so we never went.
Hmm.
It's a shame, man. Europe's our bread and butter, really. I mean,
we make yeah, signed better more over there. Than we do over here. There, when I go over there with Rhino Bucket, I'm always signing Kix CDs.
So. Right. Yeah, I bet Kix would kill it over there for sure, because there's a big nostalgia for all that 80s metal now. And
yeah,
I think they would really do well. Well, for me, I remember there was a time where I thought everything was about to happen for us. We had just made that country record for Sub Pop. This is like the end of the 1900s, 97 or 98, I guess it was. And we left Sub Pop and we signed with Interscope Records. So we thought during that window, after we left Sub Pop and before, right when we were making the Interscope record, I felt like, okay, this is it. I'd written all these great songs. I felt like the songs are there. The band is on the right label. Everything's going to work out for us. And we're about to be, now it's our turn to be Green Day or whatever it is, you know? And of course, as fate would have it, the record never even came out. We were dropped before the record even got released. And those songs wound up being on a great record called The Evil Powers of Rock and Roll, but it didn't get put out by the major label or anything like that, like we had hoped it would. You know, basically, we wound up spending like $200,000 on what amounted to pre-production for a record that we spent like, I don't know, 30 grand making. So, wow. Which now still seems like a lot of money to spend on making a record, but you know, back then it wasn't much.
Yeah. What were some of your guys' jobs before you started doing music stuff?
Wow. I've been playing since the mid 70s. So, I did have to get a job in the 90s after I left Kix. the first time. But I used to make
pizza. Were you working in music though in the 90s still?
Yeah, I was always playing in some band.
Yeah.
Like that's when I left the East Coast and went to California.
So you were in LA for a minute, and then where are you now? What state?
I'm in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's much more happening here. It seemed like Los Angeles pretty much dried up, but
really?
Yeah, so anyway, I made pizzas before I actually started, you know, being paid for playing music. And then in the 90s, I worked for my brother painting billboards. And then right after rehab, I got a job at a pet clinic for like 12 years. So I was working at this pet clinic doing Rhino Bucket and Kicks at the same time, like flying out on the weekends and coming back to work on Monday. So now I don't have to worry about, you know, I just play music now. But
yeah. What were your jobs when you were a kid, Eddie?
The most memorable job I had was I was putting camper shells on the back of trucks in Tucson, Arizona. You know, we grew up in Tucson. We started the band in Tucson, and it was so hot, you know, it was like 110 outside, and you got to put one of those, you know, those plastic shells you put on the back of pickup trucks, and you got to put one of those back, and then you got to climb in there, and you got to, you know, bolt it down. It was, I mean, just covered in sweat and fiberglass at the end of every day, just itchy and sweaty, and just, oh, it was awful, awful work. It wasn't my last job. I think the last job I had was either, I was working in the warehouse of a record store, which was actually a pretty cool job.
Sure.
Or bussing tables or something like that. I can't remember which. I remember the last day I had to work. I was like, okay, I'm going to go on tour and I'm going to quit this job and I'm not going to come back to work. And this was in 1991 or something like that. And I did it. So I haven't had to have a job since then. Although I came close during this pandemic, I actually applied at the post office.
To try to
be a mailman, but there were so many hoops and hurdles you had to jump through. I never got over through all of them, I guess.
Why were you guys so intent on leaving home? Why did you guys want to leave Arizona so much?
It just seemed so lame in Tucson. I mean, you know, bands, the only bands that came through there were like the big, you know, touring acts. Would either start or end their tour in Tucson, it seems like. But you know, there's like, we started being into, you know, smaller bands like the Replacements and you know, X, and I guess the obvious move for us from Tucson would have been to go to LA, but we felt like that was too obvious. So being contrarians, we literally flipped a coin between New Orleans or Seattle. New Orleans just because it seemed cool, and Seattle because we had a friend that had moved up there from Phoenix and told us, you know, dude, you guys got to come here. You can wear your leather jacket into June here, and it rains all the time, and there's like four bars you could play at, and there was one in Tucson. So it just seemed like anywhere we went would have been an improvement, and it was. I mean, moving to Seattle was like, I liken it to that scene in The Wizard of Oz where everything's all black and white, and then she gets sucked up in the tornado, and she lands, she opens a door, and everything's in color. That's kind of how I felt like when we got to Seattle, like open the door and wow, you know, we thought we were going to be the best band Seattle had ever seen. Like, who's from Seattle? Nobody. Heart, Jimi Hendrix, I guess, you know, but they, you know, they weren't like making waves at the time. We didn't realize where we were going was about to be, you know, rock mecca USA for a few years. We got there and there was already Soundgarden was already there, Mudhoney was already there, Nirvana was already going, and all these bands are already thriving there, and we had to pick up the pace.
Do you still have your Seattle leather jacket?
No, I actually never had a leather jacket. So,
oh man, what a buzzkill.
I had, you know, a denim jacket, but you know, just the fact that you could wear a jacket into the summer months in Seattle was a miracle.
How long did you live there?
In Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, it's like so different than Arizona, where you're kind of like, even though you wanted it, it's a little bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, I lived in Seattle for 25 years.
Oh, for long, 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 long. And yeah. You were in LA for a really long time, you said, right, Brian?
I don't know.
Yeah, forever. You like being in Nashville?
Yeah, I've been here a little over 2 years now, and yeah, it's nice. I mean, I bought this nice house for, I mean, I could never get anything close to this in LA, and I've got like a half acre, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, I love it here. And
Yeah.
that was one of the pluses of the pandemic. It allowed me to sort of settle in and just enjoy this place, you know? And well, and then the bonus is the music scene is happening here.
It's great. Plus, there's a
Yeah.
lot of, you could get gigs doing studio work, I think, if you want.
Maybe, but the players are so
They're so
good.
good. Yeah.
I feel like a beginner.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I really do appreciate you hanging out. Thanks for spending some time with me. And I look forward to going to see you guys both play soon. Do you have dates lined up, Brian?
Oh yeah, we're playing every weekend. We've been playing since May, at the end of May. But
Cool.
yeah, this week we're in Charlotte, and next week we're, I don't know, we're it, it's on it's just ongoing from here on out. Mostly
With
we're playing
Rhino
with,
Bucket.
no, this is Kicks, all Kicks
Oh,
stuff.
okay, very cool. All
But there's some Rhino Bucket stuff coming later.
right, so you're busy.
Now, what happened with Rhino Bucket? They broke up and then they got back together. Like George,
Yeah.
like, I quit. I'm done with this. Forget it. And then,
Yeah, that's George.
oh, I guess I'm like, oh, no, I knew he wouldn't be done. I just,
Yeah.
it's so ridiculous when a band breaks up when
Well,
everybody's still around, you know?
what is this? The
George.
joke? It's Kiss's last tour. It's our farewell tour.
Well, with
Right. No
George,
more tours.
George, it's always like all or nothing, you know? Like
Right.
he's that way with his everything, his CDs. Like he'll just toss everything, just decide he doesn't want anything anymore. But he did that with the band. He was just frustrated because, you know, it just seemed like nothing was going on. And then I knew he would get bored. And then all of a sudden the phone calls started coming, and I'm like, oh,
Right.
okay, he's bored.
I'm glad he's back because Rhino Bucket is so great.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
love playing with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're staying busy. What about you, Eddie? What do you have lined up?
Well, we've got a few shows in September coming up. Just like a few, and then we're gonna have like a short little run in October. We'll dip our toes back in the water in October, do a couple weeks there, and then January we start hitting it real hard. So we're looking to 2022 being really busy, and you know,
Cool.
hopefully we'll have enough new material to put out another record, even though what's the point? I mean,
Yeah.
the world needs another record, rock and roll record, like you know, but it's fun for us to do, and it's what
When's
we do.
Frank coming
So
out? When's was it Frank Meyer? When's Frank coming out with his record? Do you know?
me and Frank's record,
Yeah.
where I guess we're looking at releasing it for real in October, but we've
Ah.
got the CDs now, and so we're just going to start selling, and we're playing a little solo show this weekend, actually this Friday, so we'll start selling them there.
Right on. All right.
Yeah, we're hanging in there.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
That was
Yeah,
fun.
thanks.
Hey, thanks for watching Party Like a Rockstar. If you're not already subscribed to the Facebook or YouTube channels, do it. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. The handle is Party of Stars. Thanks for watching. You'll see you next time.